Iran braces for further sanctions today. This is the Marketplace Morning Report live from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. Last week, Iran shot down a U.S. intelligence drone. Today, Washington is expected to argue at the United Nations that the drone was in international airspace. And President Trump has promised fresh sanctions as his lead diplomat Mike Pompeo visits Iran's rivals, Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. Lee Hansen leads an international trade and national security team at the law firm Reed Smith. She says vital parts of Iran's economy are already crippled by sanctions.
What we're talking about primarily would be the oil and gas industry. The military is already sanctioned. Just a few months ago, there were also additional sanctions placed on steel, raw materials, coal, for example. And then there's also a number of individuals and entities that are specifically designated so that even non-U.S. persons would be prohibited from engaging in any transactions with those people.
So what's left then to be sanctioned?
It's a good question. I think we're likely to see more sanctions on the oil and gas industry. I think there's also a possibility of additional sanctions on the transport, the shipping industry, possibly even additional ports. We've seen, for example, one organization, Tidewater, which previously controlled a lot of the port activity in the main ports of Iran. But, you know, it wouldn't be surprising to see the U.S. government try to close that loophole, which would, you know, virtually shut down all other types of trade that rely on those ports to get goods in and out.
We've seen a fairly robust response from Iran over the past few weeks to all of this. Are there worries about not just Iran's economy and the pressure this is going to put, but about regional stability?
I think that's absolutely the case. You know, there's a lot of infighting with a number of countries that either support Iran or don't support Iran. And I think that's certainly going to have an economic impact going forward.
Lee Hansen there. Let's do the numbers. Oil prices are up slightly on the back of those ongoing U.S.-Iran tensions. Meanwhile, European stocks edge down as hopes waned for progress in U.S.-China trade talks at this week's G20 meeting. Germany's DAX is down 0.5%, while the FTSE 100 in London is flat. Now, Turkey's president has congratulated the opposition for winning a mayor's election in Istanbul, not once, but twice. The first result was cancelled, but the Republican People's Party secured roughly 54% of the vote after a rerun on Sunday. The opposition win is seen as a stinging rebuke of President Erdogan's rule, not least for Turkey's economy. The lira has plunged to half its value against the dollar in the last 5 years. Jason Tuvey at Capital Economics says the pain is set to continue.
A lot of Turkey's problems boil down to the fact that Mr. Erdogan takes a very interventionist approach to economic policy. His unorthodox approaches are leading to a significant build-up of risks within Turkey's economy. Tensions are mounting with the US over the deal that Turkey has with Russia over a missile defence system. The US has said that if Turkey continues to pursue that, it will impose sanctions on Turkey. The mere risk of sanctions will spook investors. And not only that, if sanctions put on, say, Turkey's banking sector, that could lead to very severe problems.
Jason Tuvey. Scientists from around the world are meeting in Germany to talk about ways to make money from sucking carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. CO2 is overheating the planet. Dr. Katie Lamb at the University of York, who specializes in converting CO2 into usable products, is there.
CO2 can be used to make a lot of wonderful things. So one example, Covestro, a company, have found ways to turn CO2 into mattresses. A mattress is basically made of these chemical components that we call polymers. Many, many carbon atoms lined up. That is essentially your mattress. And by using the CO2 in the correct way, we can convert the carbon dioxide into these long chain polymers. And by using these long chain polymers, you can put it into a mattress. Other examples, we can use it to make components of lithium ion batteries. So the reason we're able to chat on the phone as I am now is because we can actually turn CO2 to components of our phones. We can use it to make green fuels. Biodegradable plastics is a big thing at the moment.
So these companies are what we call carbon negative. They're not producing CO2 and releasing it into the atmosphere, but actually sucking it out and locking it in.
It can vary from company to company. So I believe, yes, that Covestro, in not only making these matches, have done a lot of work into what we call life cycle analysis, where people view their processes and make sure that, yes, in the long run, they're not emitting more carbon dioxide than what they're using. But there are companies out there, yes, that actually have found ways of taking CO2 out of the atmosphere and either storing it for people to use for other applications, or have also found ways of taking it directly from there and then using it to make other products.
So what is the impact potentially of these kinds of companies on global warming, on the fact that we have too much CO2 in the air?
They can have quite a huge impact, really. It's not an easy problem to solve, I'm afraid. So last year it was estimated that approximately 37, maybe even now to 38 billion tonnes of CO2 were released into the atmosphere. That mass equates to, I think it was 100 million jumbo jets of CO2 was released globally in 1 year. By highlighting, look, we can use CO2 as a resource, it's not a waste, this really can help to offset the problems of global warming, as unless we tackle it now and immediately and really do tackle this global problem of CO2 emissions and turn it into products where industries can actually sell it for a good value, global warming will continue to be a problem.
Dr. Katie Lamb of the University of York there. Finally, it's best known for decimating lettuces, but in Japan, a humble slug halted dozens of trains and delayed 12,000 passengers after it crawled into an electrical power device installed near the tracks. Never underestimate the power of nature. I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.